All right, it's the fan pregame. We're working on a holiday Friday, but not for long. This is a half-hour fan pregame. Justin Cuthbert and Jesse Rubinoff, Blue Jays baseball's next. Chris Bassett and the Blue Jays in Tampa for game two. Aaron Civale on the bump for the Tampa Bay Rays. Ailish in Wolseley, Saskatchewan right
Wolseley.
Now. Wolseley, Saskatchewan for Kraft Hockeyville. So we'll see who gets the nod there, but maybe Ailish will be in the middle of a party somewhere tomorrow in Saskatchewan. That'll be a lot of fun. A lot of fun to talk to you, of course, Jesse. What's going on, man?
Not much, man. It's all good. Happy to see the Blue Jays get off to a good start yesterday. It felt like the recipe was exactly what you think they need. And a lot of questions obviously coming in. I think expectations are a little bit lower this year just because of the disappointment of the last two seasons. But to get off to such a good start like they did yesterday, I mean, it's a good feeling. It's a good feeling.
Yeah, a couple of things that you could easily check off as not essentials per se, but definitely things you wanted to see early on, at least in the Blue Jays season. Vladdy going deep with a beautiful swing. Springer doing the same. Kevin Biggio even the bottom of the lineup. And, of course, Jose Berríos having a real quality start on opening day. To talk about that and more, let's bring in Chris LaRue.
Yes, sir.
Sportsnet MLB analyst and former MLB pitcher. What's going on, Chris?
I just want to say thank you for inviting me to this beautiful studio.
Yeah.
I've never been on this side of the building, so
it's pretty nice. Yeah. I'm like half allowed on this side of the building, despite having to work here every day. The key card is still an issue, but yeah, it's pretty cool over here. What did you make of yesterday? I mean, you can't make much of one of 162, but in terms, as I was saying, of like nice things to happen on opening day, things to just be nipped in the bud in terms of potential negative narratives. I mean, it seemed like that was a pretty good start in terms of setting the tone.
Well, I think there's been a lot of negative narratives all off season with, first of all, the Shohei Ohtani catastrophe.
Yeah, good word.
And then the fact that the Blue Jays didn't really sign any big names. Although Justin Turner's a big name, guys. Like, he's 39. I get it. Like, that's also a narrative that I'm tired of hearing. He's 39 years old, but look at his stats last year.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he would have been second best hitter on the team.
Career high RBI, right? 96.
And he sells tickets. Look at him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was walking on the field in Dunedin, and there was a lady yelling at him, screaming at him, Justin, sign my ball. I have red hair too. And I was just like, this guy puts butts in seats. He's awesome. I mean, I got the chance to play against him.
Mm-hmm.
I got the chance to see him in Los Angeles. And he's just a guy that just like, he's just fun to watch. He's like another Bo Bichette, not because of the hair, not because of anything else, but he's just fun to watch. And last night, I think the offense definitely quieted some naysayers with Vlad's home run, which was great.
Yeah.
That was a missile.
Yeah, it was
Holy
ridiculous.
Cow. And then you have George Springer. George Springer's another guy that has like, there's been so many negative things said the last 2 years about George Springer, and finally he comes out and hits that bomb last night. He's a fun guy to watch too. Like this team, I'm telling you, will surprise a lot of people. I'm not saying they're going to win the World Series. Like, that's a stretch. But they're going to be a playoff team. And then after that, who knows? Look at Arizona last year. Look at Texas.
Get hot.
Yeah.
You mentioned the negativity, and I had talked about maybe the expectations being a little bit lower for this team. And most still expect them to make the playoffs, like you said. But nonetheless, given the way last year ended and even the year before, I think fans maybe were a little bit upset about the look of the roster coming into this season. But what does that do for a player when the vibe isn't necessarily, okay, we're expected to win the World Series? Because the last couple seasons, the Blue Jays were among the favorites to win the World Series, and it didn't pan out. But this year, they're a little bit more under the radar. What can that do for the players inside the dugout and inside the clubhouse in terms of really getting them going and maybe just coming and approaching it with a different attitude?
Well, I think it's a lot easier to play. I mean, you guys probably know, like, it's a lot easier to play when there's no pressure on you, right? Like, the fan base isn't expecting the Blue Jays to come in last place in the American League East, but they're not expecting them to come in first place.
Yeah.
So the pressure is essentially off, right? You look at a guy like Dalton Varsho. He came in here last year and there was so much pressure on him. Like, he was trying so hard at all times last season. And I think that this season he'll surprise a lot of people. I know I'm saying that a lot today, but I think that Dalton Varsho is going to surprise a lot of people. Alejandro Kirk, he is a good player. I've heard people say that he's part of this core. Guerrero, Bichette, And then Alejandro Kirk, people love him. Mm-hmm. Like, if you get to see him every day, the way he hits, the way he catches, man, he's going to surprise people too. Like, I'm telling you, he's one of the top, I would say, five or six catchers in all of baseball.
Wow.
And I know that's a strong statement because he didn't play well last year, but he was tired. Like, he played a lot in 2022. Obviously, he was an all-star. He was a silver slugger. And I think that he can be those things again. He looks really, really refreshed. I said this last night on the broadcast. He looks light on his feet. He looks like he slept for, like, 3 weeks. You know how you feel when you sleep for, you know, 13 or 14 hours, you just feel good. He looks like that. I'm telling you, it's going to be Vlad, it's going to be Bo, and it's going to be Alejandro Kirk. Wow. That really surprised
me. So you're not concerned at all about him having to play as many games as he's likely to play in the early going because of the Jansen injury?
Yeah, early going. And then Danny's going to be back soon. But I think that him playing, you know, 5 days a week or 6 days a week for 3 weeks, that's not a big deal. But if it was for 4 or 5 months, I think you would see some regression like we saw last year. Mm-hmm. Last year, it was a huge disappointment because I'm a huge Alejandro Kirk fan. Like, he just does everything well. The only thing he doesn't do well is throw the baseball, but, I mean, whatever. He can't be perfect.
13 to 14 hours sleep is pretty funny because, like, you compare that to last year when he was coming to spring training late because he was having, you know, welcoming the birth of a new child, and that probably threw off his preparation, threw off his season to some degree, and then has forced to play a lot because, you know, Danny Jansen did miss some time. So if he is refreshed, it might be harder with a one-year-old, but if he is refreshed, maybe that will portend great things. I mean, I can't really ignore the Jose Berríos, not just performance, but just his career, where he's at, his professionalism, everything that kind of encompasses Jose Berríos. I think it's worth admiring. This guy lost and found himself. First batter yesterday, hit over the fence. Doesn't miss a start, 32 starts every single year, fields his position beautifully, takes last season and the disappointment of what happened in the playoffs in stride. Like, everything that Berríos does, I come away impressed with. So what do you admire most about Jose Berríos?
Well, first of all, he's one of the nicer guys in all of baseball and all of sports. Like, you talk to him, he'll give you 10, 15, 20 minutes, and you guys know that snagging an athlete for 15 minutes is impossible almost, right? Like, they barely want to talk to you for more than 3 or 4 minutes, and then they have to go take a shower or do something, right? We all know that. Like, eat. I don't know what they do. I've been retired for so long. I don't even know what athletes do anymore. Yeah. They got to do a cryo plunge or whatever the heck you call it. But I said this last night, and I kind of put my foot in my mouth. The first, like, 3 or 4 pitches of the game, it looked like it was July. Like, he looked so sharp, so on. And then, of course, he throws that changeup in. Yandy Diaz hits a smoke show out to left field. But after that, I mean, he dialed it back in, and he just looked really good. And like you said, he's just so consistent. And that's what you pay people for. You pay for the Chris Bassett consistency of last year. You pay for the Jose Berríos consistency over the length of his career. He's just a guy, you throw him out there, you know what he's going to get, right? So, I mean, Jose Berríos is he your one? I don't know. Kevin Gausman's pretty solid too, but they're pretty close in my opinion.
Yeah, I always say he's my favorite pitcher to watch just because of the movement of the baseball and his demeanor, and there's so many things. He's like an artist, and yesterday was a really good example of what you can see from Jose Berríos. I want to get to Vlad, because there's obviously a contingent of the fan base, I think, now who are resigned or have resigned themselves to, okay, maybe Vladimir Guerrero Jr. isn't the guy from the 2021 season. It's now 2024, and we haven't seen that guy in a few years now. Where do you land on what the expectations should be for Vladimir Guerrero Jr.? Because when you see a swing like he had yesterday, 450 feet to straightaway center, the tantalizing potential is obviously there. You hope that he can string it together for longer than he's been able to the last couple of seasons, but nonetheless, it's staring you right in the face that this guy could be an MVP-type candidate once again.
I've had this conversation with my parents. I've had this conversation with friends. I've had this conversation with colleagues. The problem with Vlad isn't so much the swing or the pressure or this negative narrative that he obviously knows is out there. He's not oblivious to the fact that fans are saying, why aren't you hitting 45 homers and driving in 130 RBIs. I think it's for him, it's just pitch selection. And you hear Barker preach this all day long. You hear baseball guys preach this all day long. He needs to go up there with some sort of approach, whether it's looking for a fastball or laying off the curveball. But if I were him, I would use the big part of the field. Joey Votto said this early on in spring training. The best hitters in baseball, they use the big part of the field, right center to left center, and that's it. And if you look at Joey's stats, he rarely hits the ball down the right field line, and he rarely hits the ball down the left field line because he's just trying to hit the ball up the middle every single time. And I can almost guarantee that him and Votto had a – or Vlad and Votto had some sort of conversation in spring training where Joey was like, yo, it's not that hard. Pitch selection and drive the ball up the middle, and you could be one of the best hitters in baseball. Mm-hmm. And we saw last night, where did his home run go? Dead center, right? 450. So he has
– it's crazy.
I mean, it's like – it. Like, when that happened, I was just like, okay, he's back.
Yeah.
And then he rolls over a slider away the next at bat. I'm just like, maybe he's not back yet.
Yeah.
But at least he has some sort of idea as to what to do with that fastball on the outer third of the plate. Hit it in the big part of the field. That's it. That's all you have to do. And I was a hitter in college, so I'm not a professional hitter by any means. But if you listen to guys like Votto, who is one of the best to ever do it, use the big part of the field and pitch selection are the two biggest things.
It's so funny. I was watching Mark DeRosa did a little bit of hitting analysis on Vlad. I don't know if you saw this last night. It was after the home run, and he was talking about the difference in Vlad's load this year compared to a year ago. And it was as simple as just having his hands a tiny fraction bit higher. Mm-hmm. And obviously it's just one swing and mm-hmm. things can change. But it just underscored to me how difficult of a sport baseball is. That if the difference in a swing between a 450-foot home run and rolling over in a ground ball is a hand position that's a couple of inches, if that, it's like, man, these guys are so incredibly talented. And you start to understand and almost sympathize with them a little bit. You know, when the going gets tough, you can understand why. It is a very, very difficult sport.
Oh, it's impossible. Like, they're always tinkering. If you go in the tunnels at the Rogers Center and you can see the batting cages where the Blue Jays and whatever team they're playing hit at, and if you just stand there and watch them, even the best hitters in the world, Vlad, Bo, they're always tinkering. And I don't know what it's like in other sports. I can't speak to hockey or basketball or anything like that. But these guys are always tinkering. If they're 0 for 3 the night before, they're coming to the cage the next day and they're trying to figure out where their hand placement is, what they did wrong on that slider away. There's so many things. That's why baseball is so hard and it's so interesting to study. And people still are getting paid millions and millions of dollars and they're hitting 270.
Yeah.
You know, like,
it's a sport of failure.
Yeah. And I mean, that's such a funny narrative to me that baseball is a game of failure, but it is. Like, I hate saying that, but most guys fail and they get paid a lot of money
to fail. Yeah.
So obviously tinkering is happening all the time, right?
All the time, dude.
But
all the time.
It happens. I'm imagining more or with more frequency when things are not going well. Right. Mm. So not that the Blue Jays 2-0 can change the trajectory of the season, but let's say things are really good to start. They rack up wins. They rack up series wins. Guys that are important are hitting home runs. Guys lesser in the lineup are doing their part as well. Like, what does a hot start in a baseball season do for you? Does it take a lot of the stress that weighed on them last year away from them, off their shoulders immediately? Like, if the Blue Jays can get it going here, win tonight, win series here, what will that mean for July?
Well, I mean, you hit the nail on the head right there. Is it takes the pressure off, right? Like the negative narrative of the offseason. I'm sure Shapiro and Ross will attest to this. Mm. That negative narrative can easily be switched into a positive narrative with a hot start. But you can't win a pennant in April, and you could probably lose a pennant in April. But if you get hot in June and July, you can probably make up some ground. So it's not the end of the world if either happens. I think the biggest thing for this team right now is just the offensive approach.
Yeah.
The guys that struggled last year, George Springer, Alejandro Kirk, Vlad, Dalton Varsho. Am I missing anybody?
You're good. Yeah, Bo was pretty good last year.
Definitely not Bo. Yeah. Bo was awesome. Those guys need to have at least a semblance of an approach to turn that around and be good, at least better than they were last year.
Yeah.
And it starts with Vlad. Every conversation I have with people about what needs to happen this year for the Jays, Vlad, every time. If Vlad hits 275 with 35 or 40 and drives in 110, the Jays have a chance at winning a World Series.
I got one more for you. I know you spent a lot of time at spring training. Of the guys who are sort of, you know, weren't in the starting lineup yesterday, some of the, I don't want to call them lesser names, but guys who haven't been in the major leagues for that long of a time, the Ernie Clements and the Davis Schneiders, which of that group of players do you expect to make the biggest impact throughout the season? Because we obviously know what Davis Schneider did when he came up a year ago, but should we be expecting him to be the guy once again, or should we expect a guy like an Ernie Clement to come in and, you know, hit 280 and 15 home runs and really, really help out the cause? Like, which is the guy that you're looking for towards having a good year?
I think that's a tough question because it's hard. And Ernie Clement is a great player. He would have, if the Blue Jays would have DFA'd him, he would have gotten picked up by another team and potentially even started on probably half the teams in the league. But it's also hard to think a utility guy can come in and change the team.
Mm-hmm.
Like, his role is important, but I think that you look at Davis Schneider's role, who will come in late in ball games. He can platoon in left field, potentially play second base with Kevin Biggio. I think Davis Schneider is the most important guy. And if he can figure out that hole, that's a big hole in his swing.
Yeah, a lot of Ks.
He can't for some reason, and I think his swing is a little loopy. Mm-hmm. He knows that. Everybody in baseball knows that he has a little bit of a loop to his swing, and he can't get that fastball above, like, just below the letters,
mm-hmm.
which is a strike. That's a high strike. He just needs to lay off of it. He can't get to it. It's almost like, I mean, we all saw it last year. Like, it's a sad to watch. Like, he was just swinging through that pitch after pitch after pitch.
And you're just, like, bashing your head against the wall, like, figure it out, man. Just try.
And I'm not
it out.
And like I said, I'm not a hitter, but I'm a pitcher, and I know where there's holes in guys' swings.
Sure.
And if I see Davis Schneider coming to the plate, I'm throwing that fastball right here every time.
Mm-hmm.
So what he has to do is just lay off that pitch and wait for a pitch lower in the zone that he can hit. And we saw that he has a ton of power. He's a skilled player, but that was kind of a long-winded answer, and I hate being negative towards guys, but I think he knows that he has a little bit of a hole in his swing. But I think his role and the impact he can have on this team is so important.
Yeah.
A guy that plays left field, second base, and can potentially hit for some power. Davis Schneider's my guy.
Not in the starting lineup today. The Blue Jays will run out the same lineup against Aaron Civale and the Tampa Bay Rays. Chris, we appreciate you coming in. Let's do this again soon.
Anytime.
You're always welcome on this
anytime,
side
this beautiful studio that I've never seen in my life.
There he goes. Chris LaRue, thanks again for jumping on with us today. You know, we kind of talked about it a little bit, Jesse, off the top there, but encouraging signs, right? Like, lots of really good things. And I don't want to gloss over one other one, which is Kevin Biggio going yard and being in the position where he can turn over a lineup. I mean, I think some level of faith was restored in Kevin Biggio last year. He kind of took on whipping boy status just a little bit, but
he
really
did.
Came on over the back half of the year. There's still hope for me there, like other portions of the lineup, that there's going to be something actual, like real and tangible, and that you can use to put together a good baseball team. It's not piecemeal, but it's like the Blue Jays are in a position where everyone kind of has to do their job to make it look good.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, what we saw yesterday, at least everyone putting their best foot forward and at least on the path of getting to that.
For sure. It's so encouraging. It almost feels like lazy to say that, okay, you're going to need your big boys to do what they have to do. And then the bottom of the order is going to have to sprinkle in some RBI as well. Like, it's like, well, yeah, what baseball team doesn't need that? But the reality is, we saw the complete opposite of that a year ago, and the Blue Jays were still relatively competitive. If you can have your best players pick up the RBIs when you need them the very most, and you get the contributions from the bottom of the order like they did yesterday, that it cannot be understated how important and how game-changing that is for this organization, for this team. If the pitching stays healthy like it did a year ago, it was an unprecedented run of health, but it was the best or second best rotation in all of baseball and probably the best pitching staff through and through. You get the offensive contributions. I mean, the sky's the limit. Like, that's legitimately what we're looking at here. This could be one of the best teams in all of baseball, but you need things to break your way, and you need the guys that have the potential to actually follow through on that potential. And yeah, man, like, incredibly encouraging by what we saw last night.
We'll throw to game two of 162 in about 5 minutes, but let's switch gears a little bit for the final 5 minutes of the show. You know, it's not the busiest night in the NHL. I think it's the Devils and Sabres is the only game tonight, but yesterday was a banger. Saturday night's a banger. There's a lot of really important things down the stretch with 2.5 weeks left. All four divisions still up for grabs. President's Trophy still up for grabs.
Crazy.
Wild card still to be determined.
Let's go.
Maybe more so. Lots of good stuff. For two and a half weeks, we just have to wait until tomorrow night. But I asked you a question before the show. The thing that matters the most for you when looking at the stretch run of the regular season in the NHL, if you were to pick something, what stands out for you?
It would be peak at the right time. I went back and looked at some of the Aprils that the teams have had in the past who've gone on to win the Stanley Cup. So the Vegas Golden Knights, for example, a year ago, April 2023, 9-1-2 was the second best record in the NHL. They went on to win the Stanley Cup. Colorado Avalanche, the year before that, 8-5-1. Tampa Bay Lightning won 10 of 17 in 2021. You need to be peaking at the right time. You're seeing shades of this in March Madness as well in the NCAA. Teams that had a pretty good time in their own conference tournaments are faring pretty well in March Madness. And I would say, man, there's some teams that are stumbling a bit here. You look at the Winnipeg Jets having a bit of a tough time as
Florida
of late.
Panthers,
they were a
juggernaut.
Florida Panthers. And you start to wonder, when are they going to ramp it up? And I know there's some trepidation. If you go on Twitter and search through some of the fan bases, you'll see there's trepidation from those fan bases. Can they turn it on? It's a big question. It starts to make everybody a little bit nervous as you get towards the end of regular season. So I would say just try and peak at the right time.
Well, here's a team that is peaking at the right time. The Tampa Bay Lightning are suddenly a scary team. And
shocker.
I'm going to be watching them for the next 2.5 weeks. 850 points percentage in March. It's first in the NHL. Yeah. Seventh best record since January 1. Second best scoring rate since January 1. And they've done this with bottom four goaltending in the entire NHL all year. Where Tampa lands in the Eastern Conference playoff bracket might be the most interesting thing because...
Totally.
Well, yeah. I mean, if the New York Rangers win the President's Trophy, I guess they avoid the number one wild card. But if you throw Tampa into the mix with Florida and Boston and Toronto, maybe they catch Toronto. I don't know how it's going to shake out, but I do not want, especially if I'm a top team, to get the Tampa Bay Lightning in the first round of the playoffs. So the Tampa Bay Lightning are the most interesting team, at least for me, down the stretch of the regular season. Got about a minute for best bets here. I'm going to... Well, we'll start with the Blue Jays. Plus 100, cashed his dogs yesterday. I'm maybe not in the frame of mind to be betting the Blue Jays, at least at this moment, right? With NHL winding down and March Madness ongoing. Let's just get a couple reads first, at least for me. But Blue Jays, once again, an underdog slightly at plus 100. My pick, though, is the Tennessee Volunteers tonight in the Sweet 16. I just think Creighton is a fraud. I think Creighton's loses.
A fraud. Okay.
I think Tennessee will be able to cover that number. They might need some... free throw shooting at the end in order to do it, but I like Tennessee. I think they're better than Creighton. I think they win and cover tonight.
It's just amazing how this tournament always delivers, isn't it? Like every single year you get the crazy finishes, and I'm sure we'll see it. The 2.5
Last
line, we'll probably get
wild.
Another one. Last night was crazy. Okay, for my best bet, I'm going with the San Diego Padres on the run line. That's -1.5. Some pretty good odds there, plus 150 on the juice. Joe Musgrove got absolutely lit up in the Korean series. But he's a pretty good pitcher, and he's going up against the San Francisco Giants, who I expect Musgrove to have a little bit of a bounce back tonight. So, Padres.
Yeah, Chris was talking about the tinkering. Joe Musgrove. I guess,
he tinkered.
A little tinkering since he's been at Seoul. A little tinkering, hopefully, for Chris Bassett, who, remember, last year, blown up in his first start in the Jays. With the Jays, we'll get another chance to have a beginning with the Blue Jays tonight against the Tampa Bay Rays. Savali and Bassett. The call for that is next.